First, let me say I really like this job. There may be perverse attitude during this period of time, but I indeed do like the job, and I think when I finish this evening, you'll understand why. I do really want to thank the incumbents and candidates who run for office at the local level. I mean that most sincerely. I am one who believes that the government closest to the people is the best. I truly believe it, not just in words, and try to demonstrate that at least in my budget process and try as much as possible to hold safe our city and county governments. And those of you who are here and willing to put yourself forward for elective office have my deep and sincere appreciation. I guess it's a good way to start for the idea that I have in mind and I want to talk to you tonight about. When I first ran for office and was elected, someone said to me, "Are you an attorney?" And I said, "No, I'm not." He said, "Don't you have to be an attorney?" I said, "No, you don't. What you need to serve in the elective office is a set of principles and common sense." And that has made my job easy ever since I've been in elective office. Because I understand, at least from my way of thinking, where this nation is, what I believe is right and proper for this nation, and so I am not detached to when I think about a single issue. It fits somewhere in the fabric of my belief of our system of government. I believe, deeply believe, in we the people. I believe it sincerely. I believe so deeply that the people of our United States are intelligent, smart, and dedicated citizens. And so when our framers of that Constitution, who incidentally were the wealthier, were the educated, were those that had life rather easy and who also had a very paternal feeling about those who were less educated and had less wealth, sitting down around the table and decided they were going to give we the people a chance to see if the people can run the government. Well, so we've done that successfully for well now over 200 years. And so that experiment has produced, I think, excellent results. And I do believe in we the people. And I'm very strongly a believer that it is we, us, who have our own destiny in our hands. I find it interesting that we celebrate Lincoln, the Democrats celebrate Jefferson, and yet it was Jefferson who in fact said, "The people are smart enough to run this nation." And I believe that's something that we as Republicans can adhere to. I also believe very strongly that this is a representative form of government. And what does that mean? That means that you can't go to City Hall, so you elect someone to do that for you. You can't go to the County Commission, so you elect someone to do that for you. You can't go to the legislature, or the governorship, or Congress, or the president. So you pick somebody to speak for you. Now, speaking for you, however, means that whoever that may be must listen to you. And I have made it a very priority task of mine to continue to listen to the people because I intend to represent the people. And I will do it fiercely, and I will do it strongly. And so I believe in we the people and the representative form of government that we have. When our framers of the Constitution decided that we should be able to run our own country, they gave us our Bill of Rights and our Constitution. And here, too, let me tell you what I believe. It did not guarantee us one thing, except it guaranteed us the right and the privilege to make this nation better. They started out with a set of words. They started out with some thoughts. But it was we who had to put them into effect. Jefferson dreamed. Jefferson thought about a system of government along with all the rest. And they came up with the system that we have. But that was first on paper. It hadn't been tried before. But they came up with a good formula. The person we honor tonight is Abraham Lincoln. He is the one that, in fact, put the fabric and identity to this nation and did it better than most presidents ever have. And that's why we honor him. Not because alone he was the founder of our party, but because indeed this person was a giant in the history of the United States. He was a man of compassion, and he was a Republican. Here was a man who was determined, and he was a Republican. Here was a man who knew what was right for this nation, and under extraordinary odds and terrible personal abuse, stuck by what he believed in. I'm very proud that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican president. I personally am proud of that. And I'm especially proud of the fact that it was this man who sat down and delivered the Emancipation Proclamation. You have to understand, and if you can project yourself to those times, how significant that was in politics, and if a person was concerned for re-election, how dangerous that was in that period of time, not just in the South, but in the North. I brought something with me, maybe to give you an idea of the kind of a country we had from which Lincoln began to pull us out of. Thomas Jefferson and others said that God created a man equal and that we all had an equal opportunity. Those were words. By stroke of a pen and tremendous guts, Abraham Lincoln put that into effect. I have, and I brought with me, two items, and I'd like to read them both to you. And I'll show you, these are actual original documents. These are not, you can't see if it glares, but here's a paper, handwritten, and here's a printed bill. Notice, on Tuesday, March 5th, 1833 at 1 p.m., the following slaves will be sold at Potter's Mart in Charleston, South Carolina. But let me read now. These people are up for sale, human beings. A valuable Negro woman accustomed to all kinds of housework, is a good plain cook and an excellent dairy maid, washes and irons. She has four children, one a girl about 13 years of age, another seven, a boy about five, and an infant 11 months old. Two of the children will be sold with the mother, the others separately if it best suits the purchaser. It goes on and talks about others and ends. Also, 14 Negro wenches ranging from 16 to 25 years of age, all sound and capable of doing a good day's work in the house or field. And this, for and in consideration of the sum of $725, as will appear by a bond which I hold for a set amount and bearing date with the date of these presents, said note being signed by J. Potts Near and Nathan Near, I have bargained and sold and by these presents do bargain and sell my Negro girl Martha, a slave for life, to the said J. Potts and all. And so we were trafficking in human beings until Abraham Lincoln had the courage to stand up and say that is not tolerable under our system of government. Here is a person that knew and understood what was important to the vital health and longevity of a democracy. Now we are over 200 years old. What have we done? What have we done in our nation? What have we done to ourselves? Are we stronger today than we were then? Well, I think it's worthy of an answer. And of course, you can come up with your own answer. But have we still retained our spirit of concern and interest in one another? Have we felt a personal responsibility for one another? Or have we, in fact, lost that keen desire and personal interest in each one of us? I believe to a great degree we have, because we have given away any concern that we have by that which I called in my inaugural address the anonymity of the tax dollar. We hid from our own responsibility. We didn't want to be bothered with the problems of others. I can recall, and I've quoted in speeches in the past, receiving a letter from someone. We did have a relative responsibility law in regard to welfare in Oregon at one time. And someone wrote to me and was concerned about the fact that he had to put some money in because his mother was on welfare. And he went on to describe the fact that he had an old television set, not a new one, and an old car, not a new one. And then he said something very incredible in this letter. Why should I pay for the problems of others? This person is talking about his mother. And I remember that. And I began to worry about that fabric of strength of we the people. Because if we are strong, the nation is strong. If we are weak, the nation is weak. And it is as simple as that. It is no different than that. We have those who respond by saying, it is government that should do everything. It is government that can do it better. It is government that is smarter than we are. I became thoroughly frustrated and deeply angered during the period of LBJ in Great Society, not for the social programs that he wanted to solve. I agreed with most of them. But what angered me was the terrible waste of tax dollars without saving, without helping, without doing that which all of us believe should be done. After all of that, this period of time that has elapsed, can any one of us say that we, in fact, have equal opportunity in this country? We know there was a law that says that we have to. And there were offices set up for it, and there were billions of dollars spent toward that end. Do we, in fact, have equal opportunity? Do we have good housing in the United States? In fact, we have worse housing than we've ever had before, because even those who are not in need cannot get a home. Young people who want to start their own families and their own homes, they cannot afford it. Have we banished hunger in the United States? Now, I think the answer to all of those is no, we haven't done any of it. But there were those who said, government can do it, government is smarter than anyone else, and you leave it up to us and we'll take care of it. And whose fault is it that we've not solved it? Is it LBJ? Is it any one of those who were elected during that period of time or since? Or was it, in fact, the electorate, we the people, who didn't make the right choices? I resent promises unkept. And we have gone through 2 decades or more of unkept promises. I resent those whom I call elitists, who believe they know better than we the people, who in fact have said, we know this is good for you, don't bother yourself about it, you're going to get it whether you like it or not because it's good for you. These people are pre-revolutionaries, throwbacks to the time in which government thought they had to take care of all the people, in which the king was the father of everyone. These elitists do not believe in our form of government. And these elitists are not people with whom I will have any truck at all. But what am I saying to you? Am I telling you that the United States is going to hell in a basket and that we are lost? I don't believe that a bit. As a matter of fact, I'm bringing you what I believe to be a message of hope, an opportunity for us to recapture our own government, an opportunity for us to return our own self-esteem, our own pride in ourselves. I'm saying to you that everything that we want to do is not in the hands of anyone but ourselves, each of us, each one of us, and nowhere else. I've said so often that there isn't anyone I know of that packed a suitcase and said, I'm going to Congress, or I'm going to be a governor, or I'm going to the legislature, or city hall, or county commission, or anywhere else. They were elected by someone, and the someone were us. And so we have to remember that if we want to return our government to ourselves, that we are the most important cog in that process. You work hard for candidates and you win sometimes and you lose. And the winning, of course, is sweet. But when you lose, that doesn't mean you give up. That means you just have to try harder. And you have to reach a higher level of awareness. And you have to be alert. And you have to work hard. And I don't mean just give dollars. I mean you work on behalf of the person that you believe ought to represent you. Someone that you in fact believe does speak for you. Having said that to you, and the fact that I tell you I try to listen very carefully, and that I try to make my recommendations and my actions according to what I believe is the common voice of Oregonians, and there is such a thing. It isn't the voices of you in this room, it isn't the voices of people in other counties or other sections of the state of Oregon, but it is all that collective voice, and it's there if you listen for it. When I made my recommendation to the Oregon legislature at this special session, and I said that I did not believe in raising taxes, and that I thought that the state budget ought to share in the balancing of the budget to the tune of $120 million. One of the Portland radio stations, television station, carried my whole speech in the evening news, so I got a chance to watch it. It really wasn't that bad. And when it was over, they interviewed two members of the Democratic Party, which is entirely appropriate. I understand that. And the first among was Representative Grant Cairns from Lane County, Eugene area. And they said to him, Representative Cairns, what'd you think of the governor's speech? And his first comment was, well, it's clear he's running for governor. I don't think he realized what he just said. He thought that was a cut at me. He thought that was a severe wound of some kind. But you know what he was saying? He said the position that Atiyah took was the positions where most Oregonians are. That's what he was saying when he said I was running for governor. And so I was appealing to the Oregonians whom he believed to be in the majority. And what's wrong with that? I was elected to represent Oregonians. Now, I know if I were to take a survey in this room, I'd get different opinions of how I ought to balance that budget. Some who would be willing to give up property tax relief, and some who would be willing to pay an increase in taxation. And some who would not want to cut the budget as much as I cut it. I understand that, and I know it. But I do listen carefully. And I can tell you the common voice of Oregon is out there. And to my best judgment, a person who believes in the representative form of government, who works hard at it, that's where Oregonians are. Now, I do also believe, having told you all of this, that Oregonians believe I pushed the budget cuts to the outer limits. I believe that. But you know, I'm also proud of that, because they have finally realized that during the course of this administration, we have already trimmed ship. We have already cut our budgets. We have already tried to do that which you wanted done. And now they realize that we have done that much, and that we have, in fact, removed the fat. So I hear that word also. And so here we are today. Tomorrow we will find out what we expect might be the further shortfall in terms of budget revenues. But I want to tell you that don't be hysterical about it. There may be cuts amounting to those that I proposed. But the important thing for you to remember and feel comfortable in is that the state of Oregon cannot operate at a deficit. No matter what we do, we have to balance our budget. And we must be eternally grateful for those, our forefathers, who thought that one up. I do wish that Jefferson and the others had thought about that way back when. So we will match what we believe to be the needs of Oregonians according to the times and according to the situation. We will keep a healthy state government. We will get through this very, very difficult time in our history. And when we've done that, we will be the stronger for it. Out of this adversity that you have in the county, and you will have in the city, and we have at the state level, will be a greater awareness that you have to assume some of the responsibility for those in Oregon who need your help. That's good. That's not bad. Because all of a sudden you'll have a great deep feeling of pride and a personal sense of accomplishment, because that which is in all of us will be returned. A keen interest in our fellow man, and a keen interest in the human beings who live around us. A deep and abiding sense that we are, in fact, responsible to make this nation of ours better. And we do that, and we are stronger if we do that in the sense of trying to help others. This is a wonderful country that we have. As I'm speaking to you and I express myself, and of course I'm clearly a Republican, but I would say this is not a partisan speech in that sense. We don't hold a corner on the emotions I've just described, we as Republicans. I can't tell if I saw a stranger on the street whether they're Democrats or Republicans. We don't wear Letterman sweaters. We are human beings, Oregonians, and Americans first, all of us. We are in fact that. We're registered by some kind of a coincidence, however it happened. Many of us are. Republicans or Democrats still believe in the fundamental goodness of their nation. Republicans and Democrats want the United States to survive. Republicans and Democrats want a democracy. And all we have to do is light that fire within us, and we have that chance. The hope is on the horizon. The return to strength in the United States is there. It's coming out of adversity. That's where it's coming from. None of us want adversity. And I am not naive. And that which your fellow citizens in this area are going through, and others around Oregon, over 150,000 out of work, is personally painful to me. It really is. I want them to have what they want. They want jobs. They don't want welfare. But we will come out of it, and our future will be more certain. And our nation will be stronger, and the United States and Oregon will be, in fact, a very strong state as part of the Union. My job then is to remind you that we are what we want to be in this nation. I want to impart to you my very strong feelings about we the people and a representative form of government. Those are the principles that I brought with me. A belief that this nation is the finest nation in the world, the best experiment that ever was created. And to hear those speak all of the terrible things that we do, and we do terrible things. That doesn't mean that we should change what we're doing. That means that opportunity given to us to improve it is where we should go, not just stand and condemn. So, Abraham Lincoln is one whom we can all feel a great sense of companionship and a great sense of pride. But I do know that all Americans feel that way about Abraham Lincoln, because indeed he was a humble but dedicated person who had a vision clearer than anyone and who led this nation, who died a tragic death, but who's remembered, and how many would wish they would be like Abraham Lincoln's. So, missionaries go out and tell the world that in fact, each one of us are important, in fact, each one of us are strong, in fact, each one of us has something to give. And if we do that, we can unite. We can unite in creating this nation, which is worth prospering and bringing to a tricentennial. Let us not be the ones who lead us to the day when someone else will ask, on what day was liberty lost? At what moment did we lose freedom? It isn't going to happen that way. It isn't going to be a day or a moment. You build toward it. And we have been building toward it. And we have chanced out a turnaround and walk away from that edge. We ought to grab that moment. There are those who need our help today, who are in serious trouble today, and they need all of the warmth and compassion we could give them, and we should help them today. Not government. We should. And we'll be proud of ourselves. I am delighted to be with you. I must tell you that besides being among so many friends, that this was an entirely unique dinner that we both enjoyed immensely. Chicken is nice, but you know, six times a week is plenty enough. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. Thank you for inviting us. Dolores and I both enjoyed very much.
Other items on the agenda tonight. The first thing is you had a pink ticket, and there's a little stub on the end, and if you didn't fill out the stub and you got it in your pocket, you can come up here and put it in that bowl down there, and maybe you'll have an opportunity for a door prize. I see Arlene is sticking some extra ones of her own in there at the moment. And while some of you might be doing that, we have a special presentation we'd like to give to the governor from Scott and Sylvia Henry.
Well, Governor, on behalf of the Umpqua Valley Republican women and the Umpqua wine growers, we have a little present for our governor and his wife that serve only Oregon wines in their home.
I don't know if you're telling me that times may get tougher, but I really won't care. We did have a chance to deliver some of Oregon wine to the President of the United States and handed it to him personally, which is quite a trick by itself. So I was telling Sylvia that I did receive pictures taken in the Oval Room when I met with the President. And then one of the pictures in my arm was this bottle of Oregon. Well, it was in a box. It wasn't a bottle. It was pretty couth. You know, but here it was. And so I did get it in the press. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much.
We have five door cards.
Okay. Hold up what we're going to draw for here.
Oh, all right.
She's an old.
I'm an old.
Okay. We're drawing for that one right